words, Carrie's coattails. What sort of shoes are on those two coattails for Carrie if he remains the front runner?
Carrie's coattails? Mm-hmm. You mean whether I would ride Carrie's coattails?
If he has them, what would they be, and can you ride them?
Well, you know, I mean, I was counting on riding Dean's coattails.
You can ride them too if you want to.
I continue to support Howard Dean. I think he had the courage to speak out against the war and speak out against the Patriot Act in the very first instance and energize a group of people who never were involved in politics. That said, I recognize, you know, that John Kerry may be the nominee, and John Kerry, I think, has done an extraordinary, has an extraordinary record on a lot of issues that I care about, namely the environment. I mean, he's talked about having higher CAFE standards when it wasn't popular, about fuel efficiency. He's talked about issues of increasing foreign aid. On the war, John Kerry also, I think, has articulated a position that is different from where Tom Lantos is. And John Kerry has said that he believes very strongly that we need to internationalize the presence in Iraq, that we need a foreign policy of cooperation and not confrontation, that the Bush administration and neoconservative agenda is arrogant and not the right vision, and most importantly, that he's against the doctrine of preventive war, so that if there's not an imminent threat to our national security, we shouldn't be going out and attacking other countries. And that is a position that Tom Lantos has not taken. I mean, Tom Lantos has embraced the doctrine of preventive war and will publicly say that. And so I think to the extent that Kerry has appeal on the foreign policy issues, and it is because many people in this district will agree with him that we shouldn't have this doctrine of preventive war. And Kerry's also taken a very strong stance against the Patriot Act and has recognized, as one of the Democrats that's recognized, that the Democratic Party made a mistake in supporting that. So, I think Kerry has come to recognize that for us to be a governing party and to beat George Bush, we need to offer something different. I mean, the reason we lost in 2002 was because we didn't have a message. We had half our Democrats voting for the war and half opposing them. We didn't have the guts, except Mike Conda, not a single Democrat in this area voted against the Neutral Patriot Act. And I want a Democratic Party that's going to stand for something and that's not going to be afraid to lose an election, but articulate principles. That's how the conservatives built the movement. Barry Goldwater was the forerunner of conservatism because he stood for something. And we need liberals and progressives in this country who are going to build a party that stands for something, and then the elections will take care of themselves.
You know, one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that it's amazingly easy to get a letter published in the newspaper if you just write one. They get very few good letters, and if everybody in this room would write a letter to your local newspaper, several newspapers, you'll probably get them all published. It's so easy, and especially if you do it by email. Because
if you go to our website and click on action,
you have the email addresses for the local newspapers.
Email addresses for all the local newspapers.
Yeah. The trick is to keep it short. You know, 2-3 paragraphs. The shorter, the better. On point. You know, make it interesting, and it gets published. You know, it's extremely easy. You know, I've been published, you know, in USA Today, San Francisco Chronicle, and I'm not that much of a writer, you know. I just keep doing it. So write letters, you know. It's free, and it works. So.
Rove, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What, aside from the war, what are the other basic issues you disagree with Lantos on? And in particular, I'm curious about what view you take about Israel. I know he's got some very strong views about that.
So I'll answer your second question first. I think that Israel is a strong ally of the United States. It's we have to recognize the suffering of the Jewish people and make sure that Israel is secure and a safe state. And the security of Israel has to be a paramount concern. And it's also a strong democratic ally. So I'm very pro-Israel. That said, I'll say two things. One, just because we're pro-Israel doesn't mean that we should be oblivious to the human suffering of the Palestinian people. There are Palestinians who don't have basic water, who don't have basic resources. And the United States, we can provide a large aid to our ally Israel, and we can also provide aid, humanitarian aid, to the Palestinian people. There's nothing that says that we have to be inhumane in our outlook to that to Palestine. The other thing is that there are two camps in Israel. There's a camp of the peace camp, which believes that reconciliation with the Palestinians is in the long-term interest of the world and of Israel. And then there's the camp which believes that military force is the answer, just like there are two camps in the United States. There's the peace camp and a multilateral camp and a camp of George Bush. And I, just like I believe in multilateralism and reconciliation cooperation in the United States, I think that's also the policy that Israel should pursue, because that, I think, is ultimately in the long-term interest of Israel. And so, you know, I guess if there are specific questions about a particular issue, you know, I can address it. But my basic philosophy is that we have to be very pro-Israel, but recognize that being you can be pro-Israel in many ways. And being pro-Israel doesn't mean being pro-Ariel Sharon.
What about the other issues where you part ways with Lantos?
I disagree with Tom Lantos on education. He supported the No Child Left Behind Act, which I think was a huge mistake. Not only, I mean, the argument now that a lot of Democrats are making is we would never have supported the No Child Left Behind Act if it was fully funded. But I think that's a false premise. Even if the No Child Left Behind Act was fully funded, it would only account for 10% of a school district's budget. And the draconian sanctions for a failing school are so severe. I mean, it basically is a move towards the state takeover of public schools. And there's no way you can do that on the budget that the federal government had provided, even if No Child Left Behind was fully funded. So I think that if I were in Congress, my first priority would be to increase resources for public schools. And that, I think, is the real issue facing public education, not just to have higher rigorous standardized testing. I also think that there is a fundamental difference between Tom Lantos and me on issues of technology. And I don't think there's much more to being a congressman than voting, just voting. It's also about what you propose. One of the things I think we as a country need to do is invest in broadband technology. We spend $217 million in this country building highways and roads. It would cost about $35 billion to have broadband around the country and have every home hooked up to high-speed internet. This is something that if you go to Silicon Valley, almost every technology leader would say the one thing we need to do to prevent outsourcing of jobs, to create new job growth, is to invest in broadband. And I think that from a large part of Silicon Valley, we need a congressman who's going to advocate those issues. And Tom Lantos has been absent on those issues. I have a different view of Tom Lantos on certain social issues. He's been for a flag burning, an amendment against burning the flag. I think that that's an issue of free speech. He has not, and I think the biggest difference too is also a difference of style. Tom Lantos has made his focus and priority in Congress foreign policy. He hasn't been focused and addressed a lot of local concerns about affordable housing, about education. If you talk to people in the community, many of them haven't seen him in town hall meetings. And he probably was in town hall meetings when he was first running for Congress. But he's been there 24 years, and he started to take things for granted. And I think being someone fresh and new and someone who's, I would be someone who would be really engaged in the community. I'd show up to a lot of public forums. I want to have a lot of town hall meetings. I want to address local issues and local concerns. And I think those are that's as a style and what I bring to Congress, those are the fundamental differences.
Thanks.
How has your message been received by the sort of party apparatus, by the DNC?
So the local, I've gotten a lot of endorsements from local officials. The Stephen Abaro, who's a member of the DNC, is actually a senior consultant on my campaign. Agar Jakes, who some of you may know, is a DNC member, endorsed me. Chris Daly, who's a San Francisco supervisor, has endorsed me. There are a number of other local officials or Democrats who have endorsed me. The party leadership, Nancy Pelosi, is going to have to endorse Tom Lantos, because that's her job as minority leader, to protect incumbents. But there are a lot of people in the local Bay Area delegation who do not agree with Tom Lantos, who do not like Tom Lantos, who would be happy to see him go. We're not going to openly come out and support me, but we're not going to work against me or mobilize against me because they think that Tom Lantos doesn't represent the best of the Democratic Party.
And Matt Gonzalez, too.
And Matt Gonzalez is endorsing. Yeah.
I have a question. Just basically a campaigning question. I think the recent mayoral race, depending, I mean, it doesn't matter who you supported, but it proved that input funding doesn't necessarily equal the votes that came out of it, which is great news, obviously, for you. So, but speaking as a young voter, I think one of the problems with congressional races is that it's not localized to what we believe and what we care in. Like, how can we bring that message of how someone in Congress can actually affect our lives on a day-to-day basis? Because that's where the grassroots organizations start to build.
Well, I mean, I think that the war affects all of our lives in a sense of we're spending billions of dollars in Iraq and in maintaining a huge defense budgets for the war, which we could be spending on education, on providing scholarships so people can attend college, on creating affordable housing so that young people don't have to leave San Mateo County or parts of San Francisco because they can't afford to live here. And a congressperson can be active on issues of education, housing, and make a real difference in the community if that's what he or she chooses to do. I think one of the reasons that we people your age don't think of a congressperson as having an impact on local communities is because most congressmen aren't active in the local community. And I think a congressperson who was actually engaged in the local community, who paid attention to local issues, who was out and active in the community, could change that perception and get people excited again about politics and about the congressional races. But do you have any ideas?
Cause, I think of some.
Ro, can I ask you, you distinguish your view on Iraq from Representative Lantos's. If you get to Congress, what do you think you can do? Obviously, there's growing opposition
sure.
to the war, but how can you actually put it into play?
Sure. Well, one is the first is I eliminate a countervailing force. I mean, Tom Lantos is the ranking member of the International Relations Committee and is actively supporting President Bush's policy. So just by not having him there, I think we move a step forward. Second, I think now that we're in Iraq, it's our duty to stay. I don't think we can just abandon Iraq. And, you know, we've bombed the country. We've destabilized the region. And to advocate just a complete withdrawal of troops right now, I think is irresponsible. If I were in Congress, I would introduce legislation for the Iraq Economic Development Act, which I would say is that we should involve France, Germany, Canada, other countries that want to have a part in reconstruction and invest in education in Iraq, invest in building an infrastructure in Iraq, invest in building a stable government in Iraq. And instead, what we've been doing is spending $87 billion, which I think are largely handouts to Bechtel and Halliburton. And so my view would be, let's invest resources in Iraq. We have a moral duty to stay there. We can't just abandon the people, but let's do reconstruction in a way which one, involves our allies, two, is targeted to really helping the Iraqi people towards self-determination, and three, involves the United Nations in an international governing authority. And one point, I mean, the Bush administration now is talking about having Kofi Annan go in there and have an international authority, but I don't think the Bush administration can be trusted. I mean, there has to be a check on making sure that they follow through with what they're going to do. And I'll tell you, if I'm in Congress, I will be constantly making sure and advocating a policy of international reconstruction and making sure that the administration lives up to what it's going to say and having a vigorous opposition to a policy of unilateralism. And I don't think Tom Lantos would have that. So I'm not naive, I'm not going to change U.S. foreign policy, but I think I can start building a voice of opposition to what these policies are.
Yeah. You said you support Howard Dean. I support Howard Dean. There probably are different opinions in this room about his candidacy, but one thing that probably most, if not all of us, might agree on is that tactically, at least, he has revolutionized campaigning and his use of the internet. And I'm wondering, tactically, if you have appropriated similar some more ideas in the way you have organized your campaign and the way you are doing outreach?
Well, I went one better than Howard Dean. I got Larry Lessig on my side. And Larry's post on the blog, spawned. I was an anonymous internet person until you posted the blog, and now I've got people, kind of the idiot, kind of, you know, ultra-liberal all over the internet. So I think that the internet is an extraordinarily powerful tool for campaigns for two reasons. One, we've raised about $60,000-$70,000 on the internet, which is not the millions of dollars that Howard Dean's raising, but is about 25% of everything we've raised, and a lot of that has come from people who've been giving $100 donations, $150 donations, and these are people who wouldn't receive mailers, fundraising solicitations, because they're not the high-end donors. And so what the internet has allowed is for ordinary citizens to participate in giving to political candidates, and that's something that we've used as a fundraising technique. We have a campaign called the 2020 campaign, where we said 20,000 people give $20. We haven't gotten close to getting 20,000 people to do that, but we've gotten a lot of $20 contributions from both within the district and the internet and from outside, people who agree with our issues. I'm blogging on the internet, and people are paying attention to that. They are feel like they can participate in a online community. And the biggest thing, I think, is also the accessibility to a politician. I get about 50 emails every night from citizens asking questions on the internet, and those are people who would never probably have asked me anything or met me in person, but they have the opportunity to interact with a candidate for Congress, and it's very simple for me to reply to a lot of them. And so I think that what the internet does is give politicians a real opportunity to connect with citizens in more ways. But do you have anything to add to this?
His blog is under a Creative Commons license too, which is
What's the address?
It's www.voterow.com.
You will have a blog. There's a link to the blog part.
There
it is. That itself is just a standard web page.
Yes, and there's a link to the blog.
Along those lines, in terms of raising money, it has fallen to me to point out that
the doors are locked.
Nobody leaves.
We don't charge you for getting in, we charge you for getting
in. Campaigns do cost money. It costs money to get the message out, and it'll cost us, you know, $40,000 or more to make sure that every voting household has a mailer from Roe. We need to do this several times, you know, in order to make sure that everybody knows where Roe stands. It costs money to print our signs and our leaflets and door hangers and everything. So, if you can give and give generously, we would be very grateful. No donation is too small. We would prefer that no donation be too large, but the federal government says that we can't accept anything over $2,000. So we have contribution forms here.